Hey, welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. We're back.
Yeah, again.
It's been a while since we've done a show together, Vlad.
It's been
What have you
forever.
Been up to?
Build.
Oh yeah, Build. That happened.
Yeah, now we're preparing Build Tour.
Oh yeah, Build Tour's happening. 2 weeks starting in Shanghai and Beijing.
Yeah, and this show is actually coming late to you because we are super busy.
Yeah, we kind of forgot about this show until Friday late in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh wait, we have a show to do. We should do that.
So let's do that.
Okay, well, the big news this week was the Surface Pro.
Surface Pro,
The new Surface Pro, that's right. So there's a new Surface Pro that was announced earlier this week. There's no number after it, it's just the new Surface Pro. It uses the latest generation Intel processor. It has a 13.5-hour battery life. The pen is much, much better. It has much more better pressure sensitivity, has tilt sensitivity. It doesn't have any more the little what it's called, the pen thing, but it still works the way it is. So they just made it things much better. It looks about the same, but you can actually now go down to 12 degrees with the, is it 12 degrees? Or I forget how many degrees, but it's all the way, almost down to the ground. So it's all for the better.
Yeah, can you imagine like 13.5 hours of battery life? You can handle your like transatlantic flight from Europe and also some delays that happen all the time, right?
That's right. I mean, you charge it. It's not about that. You charge it, you charge it at home, you don't take it with you. You go wherever you go to school, you go to work, whatever. You work throughout the day, even if you work overtime or if you spend the whole day there. Come back, you still have some charging and you just charge it overnight again. No need to take it with you.
Makes sense.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
I love my Surface Book and I have the performance base. The battery thing on this is amazing. And I do that right now. And this has even more battery. The Surface Pro has even more battery.
Yeah, see, I'm using it without my charger. Look.
Yeah, so it's good stuff. I haven't played with it yet, so when I get my hands on it, I'll run it through the tests.
Yeah, I should do it too. Next.
So there was a great blog post by Brian.
Yeah, those people who make Windows, those people who actually make Surface too, they use this largest Git repo on the planet.
That's right. So Windows has fully moved over to Git from Surface Depot.
300 gigabytes. From, no, that it was Source Depot.
Source Depot. See, I don't know, Surface is in my head. It's okay.
Surface.
Exactly. Source Depot.
300 gigabytes.
300 gigabytes, I don't know how many million files they have in Git. Yeah. It's a crazy amount of files.
Yeah, 8,500 pushes per day.
They say so the whole blog post from Brian, and he had a blog post a month ago that he talked about the new way that they're actually running Git, and they've written actually a new way to do this with GFFS.
GVFS.
To be able to actually virtualize the file system and be able to do things really quickly, because they said if they didn't do this, a simple Git status would take 30 minutes to run. Can you imagine that? Just to see what files have changed or what's going on. I'm going to go get coffee, maybe get some lunch, and by the time I'm back, hopefully I'll be able to see what files have changed. And let's not even talk about cloning or checking in or pulling or whatever it is, it will take forever. So Git GFS is just amazing. It's changed the game.
Do you remember like some people at Microsoft, they were like, yeah, we should move to modern DevOps like tools because ours are too old, let's move them. And then suddenly they realized that in order to move, you need to change them completely too. Right?
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, this change hasn't been going on like all overnight. They've been doing this slowly. Right now, I think they said almost everybody is on Git, but there's still a few teams that haven't moved over to Git. But they've been doing this slowly, and they've been monitoring the progress, and things have been fast. I mean, things have been going so good so far. So it's a great blog post.
Check it out.
Yeah.
Moving back a bit to build timeframe. You know, we announced the Xamarin standard and new .NET standard 2.0, and both are coming eventually to Universal Windows platform. And there was a great blog post by like Windows team, basically, like building apps team, which is our developer focus team, about this thing in details, right? So if you're interested in the Xamarin standard in a way that we standardized building UI across all .NET platforms, basically, and not even .NET, all platforms that we support, both with Xamarin and our core development platform. If you're interested in .NET in general, First, you should check out all the build sessions about that. And second, you just read this blog post.
Yeah, and this blog post actually goes in good detail about what XAML standard is and .NET Standard 2.0 is, and just explains about the difference between where we were, how Xamarin Forms and UWP XAML and all the other XAML platforms out there, how different they are, and what XAML standard can do by providing a one unified language, not language, but a markup that can be shared across all the different platforms, and all they have to do is just support this one standard. And it shows how .NET has evolved from 1.0 to go now 1.0, 1.1, 1.2, 1.6 to now going to 2.0, and they've added over 20,000 different APIs now to .NET standard, which is amazing, because it's one of the biggest complaints that we've had for .NET standard was, well, it's great, but it doesn't have the stuff that I need. And well, now we've started adding all that stuff, so it should be much better. So Fall Creators Update on Windows UWP development will have .NET Standard 2.0 support.
Yeah, and if you haven't checked out .NET Standard, you should definitely will. Yeah. Because last week, I was working with a library, and that library was kind of, it was just .NET, like 3.5 probably from that time frame. And I needed to port it over to across .NET, like Xamarin and macOS and Windows, obviously, and UWP. Yeah. And actually, you know, let's try .NET Standard. And it was 1.4. It's not 2.0. I just ported one. I just changed basically like the project type and added all the files. And boom, they work. And you know, like, can you imagine they built an assembly that works across all the platforms?
You don't have to deal with PCLs anymore, yeah, or sharing code, all this stuff. You just build one DLL that if the platform supports .NET standard, whatever, it just works. It's awesome.
That's amazing.
It's a great way to do it.
Yeah, and talking about .NET.
Yeah, so if you were at Build, you probably saw that the .NET team was giving out this awesome posters, which I didn't get, by the way, so I'm kind of jealous. But they published the actual poster online, so people can download this. And I found out about this, actually, because I was at Build, but I didn't know about this. But I found out about this poster through This Week in .NET. So This Week in .NET is actually a great weekly post, mm-hmm, that basically just celebrates all the new stuff that's happening in .NET that week, and has blog posts from the community, blog posts from people at Microsoft, what are some news, what's relevant stuff about Xamarin, what's relevant stuff about .NET in general, UWP, et cetera. And people can actually submit ideas for what to talk about during this blog post. So it's a great way to kind of subscribe to every week, just get these different news about .NET.
And what I like about this poster, they don't focus specifically on purely like Microsoft-related, yeah, .NET. They actually go across like all the like possible personalities of .NET, if you want to say it by Terry's word. For example, for games, they cover like Unity
and Mono
game.
Yeah.
Like they say, oh, if you want to do games, this is how you do it, right? So that's really interesting.
Yeah, it's a whole platform. It's a whole thing. Just grab the poster, print it out. It might cost some money to print it out, but
I should put it then as my desktop background.
It's too small. You got to get a big. Oh, you have a big screen.
You have a
40-inch screen. Yeah, that will work. Yeah, that's a good idea. Great. So anyway, speaking of Xamarin. Mm-hmm. So Xamarin is offering a set of free webinars coming up starting June 1st. Where they're going to talk about different things that are relevant to Xamarin development for, you know, iOS, Android, and Windows development. There's stuff around building games for iOS, macOS, and tvOS. There's one about Skia Sharp graphics for Xamarin Forms. And all these webinar series are free. So we basically just go on there and just kind of start learning and just watch these webinars from Xamarin experts and their guests and be able to just learn about cool stuff. It's a great resource for all kinds of developers.
I should go there.
Yeah, if you want to learn about stuff.
I'm not a professional with Xamarin.
You should learn stuff.
I should learn stuff. Yeah, one thing I know, sort of, better than Xamarin, let's put it this way, is Windows holographic development, or like, how would say, mixed reality development. If you attended Build conference, you probably tried, or at least you know it was there, Tire Explorer demo. It was essentially HoloLens, I mean, mixed reality demo. And it was really amazing. Like, what I liked about this year, like the show floor, mm-hmm, is that they brought really like partner
Yeah, real apps.
Like partner-developed apps, and those apps are really like high quality, and they all make sense from the business perspective.
It's things that have been used by actual people. They're things that are used every day by actual companies on the HoloLens.
Yeah, and René, he's one of our MVPs, right? Mm-hmm. He actually made a blog post telling the story, how they made this app.
Yeah.
And that's just cool, because they're not just sharing the experience, they're obviously not just selling and making this. They share the story so you can use their experience and build something like that, or even better.
And I always like these blog posts of, you know, behind the scenes, mm-hmm. or, you know, this is what happened at this conference. So if you haven't even had a chance to go to that conference, there's all these blog posts right after that talk about all the things they've done, and they still promote them. So it's like you were there. I mean, there's not really a replacement for being there, but this gets you up there really close to what was happening. And I didn't have a chance to go on the floor and play with these. I didn't actually know that this existed.
Either,
So this is great that René spent the time to write this blog post and talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah, and I heard a very good feedback about this demo.
Yeah.
Very, very good feedback.
Now, talking about really, really smart people.
And sharing stuff that they were using.
So Shaz Qadir has a great blog post on a new programming language. I mean, it's not really new, but it's a programming language that's been used within Microsoft for several years now, called P.
P.
P. P. It's a programming language for asynchrony, fault tolerance, and uncertainty. I can't even say these words.
Yeah, so basically,
it's beyond my
JavaScript
brain's capacity.
That creates uncertainty, and the P that solves this problem, right?
So it's a language that's basically based, it's developed to solve problems with concurrency and all kinds of issues that happen with asynchronicity. So it's a language that's been used by Microsoft to write things like, they started with writing the USB 3.0 driver for Windows 8.0. They wrote this to avoid this type of issues. It's the language that's been used to build the Azure infrastructure, essentially. So it's a language I've been using internally that just helps solving all these issues that are there in these modern applications that we're building. You know, things that have to do with web requests and things that have to do with event-driven development and all kinds of different things.
Basically, if you have an environment that you know is all asynchronous, and that's a lot of real-time communications, there's a lot of components that need to talk to each other, P is for you. And it's not like a completely new concept. This language just makes you design your application, your components, in a way that the P compiler basically first can check like all the conflicts and deadlocks in your code. And also it gives a lot of, I would say, interop with the existing languages like C or C sharp. So you can eventually generate an application in this traditional, I would say, language and then run it.
Yeah.
But you know that it's more fault tolerance than if it was just written from scratch in that language, right?
That's right. And Shaz has a great blog post that talks about how they developed the language, what there is the language for, and they actually has links to the language itself, so you can actually get started using it.
It's open source.
Yeah.
On GitHub.
Let's talk about Xbox Game Pass. Xbox Game Pass launched at GDC, I believe, this year, or E3, sorry. It launched at E3 this year, and it was open to insiders only. And now it's actually open to, starting a few days ago, it's open to, as a preview, to Gold members. So they can start a 14-day trial now, and they can start playing this. And for those who don't know, Xbox Game Pass, it's a way to pay a monthly fee, it's $9.99, to play over 100 games anytime you want. And it's like it's a subscription for games, and you can just play them any game you want that's on Xbox Game Pass. So if you're a gamer, if you want to play all these games and just subscribe, or even start with the trial and check it out and just play stuff.
Yeah, imagine like you pay $10, and if you play a new game every 3 days, roughly, you're going to play the entire year.
So it feels like you already did the math, huh?
Yeah, while you were talking.
Awesome.
Yeah. We don't cover it with a slide, but we also launched a new version of Beam, which is not Beam anymore.
Mixer. Yes.
And they added new feature like four people doing streaming simultaneously. That's good for like multiplayer game streaming.
That's right. Yeah,
I like it. And they also have new features, but that's the biggest one. And we have E3 going right now. I believe it's like starting, right? And I'm sure next week we're going to have a lot of news from E3. I'm not sure we're going to be able to do Lisp Control 9, but
we'll try our best to do.
We'll try our best.
I leave for the build tour on Friday. Maybe I'll do one from on the road. Maybe we'll do one from one of the locations. We don't know. Anyway, what's your pick of the week, Vlad?
My pick of the week is basically a new display technology from Microsoft Research. And you know that like a lot of pieces that we have in HoloLens right now, they came from MSR. And this is not in the HoloLens or any mm-hmm. other like retail selling devices, but it's really, really good technology that they already built in hardware. It's not like just the research paper. So what's interesting, and you can see it here. First, it's display in the form factor of glasses. On the same time, it's a projector-based display. So they use a projector to project images. Mm-hmm. And that's important because all these modern technologies, display technologies, they all have this big problem, field of view. And projector technology doesn't have it. So they were able to build a really small projector. And on the same time, this small projector, first, it gives you 80 degrees field of view. That's a huge field of view for see-through glasses. Second, it gives you an ability to control your focal length. So basically, you can focus on specific like pixel. Like you can say this pixel is in focus, that pixel is not in focus. That's important for making your, let's call it hologram, right? To make your holograms look real. Because some of them are in focus, some of them are not. And third, if you have certain like, you know, like I do, if you have vision defects, like astigmatism, they can correct it, basically. They can consider it and correct it again with this projector so you see all these objects as crisp as they're supposed to be.
So this is a Microsoft Research project. Do they tell us when we're going to be able to actually take the advantage of this? I mean, is this going to go into the HoloLens?
No, like it takes time. Yeah. It doesn't mean that it goes to HoloLens, and it doesn't mean that we will immediately build it. Well, I know for sure that we're going to leverage this technology. Yeah. And that's an important thing because display is a huge part of it.
Cool. I like it. I'm hoping I can get to play with it, but you know how things are. You never get a chance to play with these MSR things.
Until you do what? Until you do something from your pick of the week.
Anyway, before we get to my pick of the week, I have a joke for you.
Okay.
How do you generate a truly random string?
Usually you ask people to exit week.
You stole my joke. You already know my joke. Anyway, so this is my pick of the week. There was a question on Stack Overflow that was asked about 5 years ago on how to exit Vim. And just recently it had over 1 million views. So over 1 million developers have been able to actually exit Vim. They've asked questions to exit Vim.
And if you ever Googled or Bing or whatever search engine you prefer for finding out how to exit Vim, please leave a comment. I just want to know how many people will leave.
I mean, I've done it so many times. Like for example, for me is when I'm doing Git, I forget to do a commit message. Uh-huh. It always helps them with Git. I was like, with Vim, it's like, okay, how do I exit this? And what do I do? Actually, I want to save this. How do I exit and save? And it's like, I get to remember these things. But there's a great blog post actually on Stack Overflow that talks about this question, talks about what countries actually have the most trouble with exit of Vim. It has all kinds of data. You know, Stack Overflow is all about data, so they always do these things. It's a great blog post to learn about all the things about, you know, how to exit Vim.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Ukraine is one of the top countries that can't exit
Vim. That surprised me a lot. Yeah. It's not the biggest country in the world.
So for those in Ukraine, we're going to do a quick half-hour session now after this to talk to you about how to exit Vim. So stick over. Everyone else can leave.
And also, if you guys are working on Cortana, especially on the like the Q&A part of Cortana, and also Google Assistant and Siri, make sure you support this question. So when people ask you how to exit Vim, you just provide instant answer.
There you go.
That's a free idea for you.
Anyway, thanks everybody for joining us this week, and hopefully we'll see you next week.
Have fun.